Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
In this week's episode of The Real Housewives of Potomac, season 5 ended in celebratory and explosive fashion, with Juan proposing to Robin and Michael Darby yelling at, well, everyone.
As you guys know, I had the pleasure of interviewing the entire cast of RHOP for BravoTV.com's exclusive season 5 after show. In the latest installment, the cast gave a very specific play-by-play of Michael and Chris Bassett's heated confrontation, which led to Michael yelling at production and Ashley yelling at Michael.
Giselle said Michael's behavior was disrespectful to Ashley. And executive producer Kamar Basaraj explained exactly why he chose to show the footage of Michael breaking the fourth wall.
Also, in our Bravo Insider clip, which is available exclusively at BravoTV.com, Karen explained the details of why she arrived so late, saying she doesn't want the fact that she was tardy for the party to take away from Robin's big night.
To see the cast break down Karen's real reason for arriving late, did she not want to be there or was she trying to make a statement? Head to BravoTV.com or check out the link in our description.
Well, while the argument between you and Candace continues on, there's all sorts of commotion going on at the bar.
Brother, you need to control your wife. She's out of control. You need to control her. It's not good for us.
Michael, you should get the out of my face.
Shut the up and listen to what I'm saying.
Yo, what? What
are you touching me? You're touching me?
What? Look, I could barely hear what was going on because Candace was yelling at me so loud.
I'm literally mid-yell, okay? I'm mid-emotion here. And I hear this ruckus to the back left of me. And I was like, dang, Robert, your guest is turning up.
I looked up and I could see producers like looking past us. Like they're like, you know, got their little walkie, whatever. And, and I looked around and I'm like, oh, okay, great. So
I had no idea what was going on, but what was going on was another fight, if you will, or a fuss. And I wanted nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, one fight, you know, shame on us. Two, shame on me for staying around and being involved with it.
And I craned my neck and I saw my husband's head just doing this. And I was like, oh, I gotta go. Stop it, go. I gotta get up. My husband doesn't get upset. He doesn't get angry. He's not agitated easily. Unless he's talking to me, because, you know, I'm his wife. But just outside of me, he doesn't get perturbed easily. When I saw his face, like, I knew. I got upset. I didn't even know what happened, but I was upset for him. Because it's like, who is messing with my man? And I get to him, and I realized what was going on. And it's just... And then it's like, okay, Michael f***ing Darby. Like, you literally just can't, you can't get right. You just can't get right.
When I heard, like, commotion and I heard someone say Michael,
When I say a fight or flight response kicked in, it was like, what? I mean, I wanted to jump across that booth and get involved in whatever was going on. And at that time, I didn't care who it was. I didn't care if Michael was getting into a fight with Juan. I didn't care if he was fighting. He could have been fighting Chris Samuels. I would have put myself in there. That liquid courage, I mean, it comes about every now and again, but it was very strong right then. Because, you know, now that Michael is more than my husband, he's also the father of my son, I'm super protective of him now.
I guess he saw me getting upset with Karen, and he gets upset that I'm upset enough to go over to my husband and show his ass, you need to control your wife. The only thing controlling Candace is Jesus, okay? My husband don't control me.
And I'm sorry, for any man, if another man comes to you and says you need to do this for your wife, like, what? Those are, that's, I don't want to call them fighting words, but that's a no-no.
You're coming up to another man to say to another man, control your wife. What? Where are they doing that? In your house? Keep that in your house. And nothing is controlled over here.
Well, you and Ashley also then start to kind of get into it.
So Monique has no self-control, but what do you have? You have no self-control, do you?
Without even knowing what's going on, she wants to charged at me. Yeah, and it's like, what? Do you even know what went down?
I actually have no recollection of that. I have no recollection of talking to Candace after the Chris and Michael incident. I don't know if it was adrenaline or what, but I have no recollection of saying anything else to her.
This whole scene just paint, it's a metaphor for their lives together. This is why you are in this predicament that you're in now, with this man who continues to disrespect you and embarrass the dog crap out of you publicly because you blindly follow his lead over a cliff.
Quite frankly, I don't think Monique is justified in getting physical with Candace, just like I don't think that Chris is justified in putting his hands on my husband. And with all of the aggression and the animosity that Candace and Chris feel toward Monique, they're actually doing the exact same thing that she did, and yet they want to cry wolf about the incident. Again, Monique was wrong, but so was Chris. And two wrongs don't make a right.
Chris Bassett wanted no parts of any trouble. Like, he was over in the corner. He was minding his business. For Michael to just, like, basically roll up on him. And he was, like, egging him on for an altercation.
Chris Bassett texted me, called me. I talked to Candace and Chris together on the phone after the party. He was so apologetic for that scene, for that happening at that party. He felt so bad. But of course, Michael, we don't hear anything from him. There's no apology from him.
And then for Michael to want to cuss out the entire production team was like, dude.
They're doing their job. Yes, they are.
You didn't cross the line and you need to go. And like, don't come back.
I mean, so disrespectful. I mean, I get it. He had a rough season 4. He probably has held on to that animosity. But like, dude, you did what you did. Like, you know, it's the only person to be mad at is yourself. So, I don't know. I mean, but clearly he's a loose cannon.
Yeah, I think it's disrespectful to Ashley. I mean, you know, Ashley, I'm sure, doesn't go to his place of business and act a fool.
No! Stop it right now!
For me, the biggest why I felt like it was important to leave it in, I just know our ladies, they're going to talk about it. They are going to talk about it, whether it's at the reunion, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's in a blog. And there were other people there who witnessed it. I never wanted to feel like I'm hiding anything from the viewers.
I feel bad for her. I feel bad for her because she's literally made into a fool every year on the show because of him.
We see you talk to your therapist, Esther.
It's like I'm in a circle of women who I still feel like I'm trying to prove to them who I am.
Yeah.
To the point where I feel like I'm always in defense mode.
I think because I am the middle child, maybe I have a little middle child syndrome, as they like to call it. But I always had to fight for the attention. I always had to fight to, you know, be seen or get my point across. Or I just always felt like I had to prove that, you know, I'm worth it. I'm here. It might not be exciting because I didn't go through it first or last, but I'm going through it. You know, so a lot of how I am with people is because of whatever I feel like I didn't get when I was growing up, or how I felt I wasn't really paid attention to as much as I would have liked from, you know, my family.
Where does all the defensiveness come from, though?
I mean, just being young and just kind of being bullied.
I went from one neighborhood where it was predominantly white, me, my sister, and another child. We were the only black kids at the entire school. And I remember being out on the playground one day, and one of the girls, I hate talking about this. At that point in time, I didn't even know what black was. I was just a person. And she's like, well, we like you. We want to play with you, but we can't because you're black. And I'm like, wait, what? What's that mean? And she's like, well, yeah, look at your hair. And I just felt like out of place. So then I think my parents started recognizing that, and they're like, okay, we're going to buy a house. We're going to go to a nice neighborhood. It's more predominantly black. And I started going to a black school. So I'm excited. I'm the new kid once again. And then it was just like, I got iced out because, oh, she's smart. Oh, she talks proper. Oh, you act like a white girl. And it was just like, wow, I can't win for losing. It was like, I couldn't even find my place in any environment that I was in. So, and I think a lot of that treatment also stems to how I am as an adult, a person who wants to show people that, you know, I just want people to know that I'm worth it and I love who I am. And I don't apologize for it. And that's why I'm so adamant with my daughter to make sure that she loves herself the way I love myself and screw anybody who doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. So I found myself more so gravitating to, I'm an animal lover. I had every animal you can think of. And I found myself gravitating more to my pets because they didn't judge me. They were happy when I came home. You know, they were happy to cuddle with me. It didn't matter. So I became a person who trusted people very less and less. And I think that because of that history, it definitely stems into my adult life, because when I do feel like I found a friend and I trust that person, and then I'm betrayed by that person, it's like I'm feeling that same childhood pain all over again. And to some extent, I think that I attract people who are damaged, because I'm always wanting to rescue somebody who I see may be the outcast. Which is why when I asked Candace in Newburgh, we had that whole questioning game that we did, and I said, what was it like growing up in school for you? And when she said she was the only brown girl, I immediately realized why our friendship was how it is, and I immediately realized what attracted me to her. It was the fact that we're two people who are hurting, and all we did was keep hurting each other. So it's just a bad cycle, you know? And just trying to break that cycle through therapy has helped me to recognize it, and then I can move forward. So when I say this is more than just a show, this is real life. I really wanted to get down to the bottom of what was going on to make me always feel like I'm guarded or needing to defend myself.
The wig shift party.
Okay.
There's some discrepancy in the text messages and the timing of the whole thing.
But it seemed like everybody had connected the dots and realized that you invited Monique and Candace to come early at the same time, and because of that, you decided to exit.
No, that's not true.
You know what? I probably was at that at Robin's party all of 5 hot seconds in my mind before the whole group just, you know, I call it gangbanging. They like to come together and attack me in a group. What a reception. Attacked by the Banshees. I was like, you know what, but y'all didn't disappoint me. I knew that it had to be something, you know, poor things. When would they learn? There was no discrepancy. I called Candace, I believe, if I get it correctly, I believe I called Candace to make sure what time she was arriving. I'm not a big texter.
Karen called me specifically to tell me that she didn't want me to have to take off my wig in front of the group to put on one of her wigs because I had expressed to Karen several times how I felt triggered by when Monique was trying to pull my wig off and my wig was glued down to my edges. So Karen knew this because we had talked about it ad nauseum. We talked about it forever. And so she called to say, hey, I want you to come early. I want you to come at 5:30. She said on the phone. She said, 5:30, come. Come early so you can have your wig taken off in private and we can have Steven put your wig on before anyone else gets there. I said, okay, great. So I am a baby Robin, so I'm late number two, and I'm always late. So I texted her, I don't want to get it wrong.
Receipts, honey.
Because I don't have a whole lot of correspondence with Karen, so it's not going to be hard to go back that far.
The receipts are longer than CVS, honey.
I said, this is on December 7th. I guess the day of or the day before. And I said, tell me what time you want me to come again. She says, 6:30, please. Then she says, what's your ETA? I say 6:40 because I'm always late. But 6:30 was not the time she originally told me. She originally told me 5:30.
It showed that they were going to be there at the same time. It just so happened that Candace was running late per usual. But no, she was having them get there at the same time.
So when I get there and I'm talking to Ashley and Ashley's telling me that Monique had just come and that it seemed like Karen, or I guess Monique had told Ashley that Karen seemed to be rushing Monique out of the party. Monique felt like she was being rushed out. That was because Karen, in her whatever stupor, had jacked up these times and knew that I was on the way.
I mean, did you guys not see me breaking sweat because I had to rush my friend out of the door? Yes. I was like, oh my God. Okay.
The timing was, you know, was Karen's timing. You know, it was her event. But you know, sometimes people don't show up exactly on time. So there was not a lot of, you know, sort of cushion in the various arrival times.
Monique did arrive early as she was supposed to, but late in terms of the time Karen wanted her to arrive. Monique was literally there for, I would say, about under 10 minutes. And then Karen tried to rush her out. And then Karen rushed her out. She went away. And then Candace arrived around, I would say, 15 minutes later.
For the record, I was invited and I did not want to be there when the other ladies came, nor did Karen want there to be any conflict. So we were in agreement with that.
And she maybe did or did not want us to run into each other. I have no idea.
In my mind, I feel like Karen got cold feet and realized what I thought I was going to do. Yeah, I shouldn't really do that. And that's why she changed the time with Candace. But originally, oh, absolutely. She was trying to get them together at the same time. No question.
But if she says she wanted to come at 5:15 and she was running late and I told her to come at 6:30, you know I had her back. There was a reason for me doing that, to ensure that there was no butting of heads because everyone's schedule shifted that day. So that's why I said come at 6:30 and not 5:30, because I wanted to make sure that she and Monique, and I was respecting their wishes not to be in the same room. So I accomplished my task. There's no fishiness there.
Both Monique and Candace were late from the time that Karen initially wanted them to arrive. So that's what really happened in terms of the orders of event. They were both were supposed to come at different times, but they both were late from their original time they were supposed to attend.
Listen, I'm not confused about the texting messages. I'm on board. I got this under control. It's a wrap. So whatever someone's trying to do to make these girls meet and betray their faith and trust in me wasn't going to happen on my watch. So I'm not confused about any of that.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Let's talk about something happy. Juan proposing to Robin.
Yay!
Oh my God!
And I want to try this for the second time.
Yay!
Will you marry me?
Okay. The room exploded. Like, people went bonkers.
Oh my goodness. So the only people who really knew were Giselle and I. We were the only, and Juan, obviously. And so people started to get a little suspicious when we gathered around. Like, you could sort of, like, hear a little whispering, like, what's going to happen kind of thing. So people started speculating. And then when it actually happened, there was, like, an eruption. Like, literally, my eardrums, like, did a little, because there was an eruption of excitement that happened.
And I don't know whether they show this, but, like, Wendy and Candace kept looking at me like, is this happening? Is this happening? What's happening?
I had hoped that they would eventually find their way to that place, but no, I was not. I mean, Giselle did a very good job of keeping the secret very secret, and no, I did not know that that's what we were coming for.
Robin, I mean, this was such a huge moment. Did you see it coming at all?
I didn't. I did not. I was like, I mean, when I was like, I had the microphone and he's like about to grab it and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? For him to like really like stand up and want to talk to people, I was like, what the hell is happening? I was like, is he going to like ask people to come to his basketball games or something, like support his team? Like, so yeah, it was awesome. It was sweet. And like, you know, Juan has a great way of expressing his feelings for me. And I really appreciated that he did it the way he did it. But for him to propose at a, you know, in front of a whole group of people on television, I was just like, I was shocked by that.
Wendy, you lose your damn mind.
I'm like, girl, first of all, we didn't work a long time on this. Second of all, get out of the camera shot. Okay, you in the camera shot, move.
Oh my God.
So I just wanted Juan to say everything he wanted to say uninterrupted by these crazy women who are losing their minds.
Let me tell you something. It's that damn vodka.
Oh my God, Wendy texted me her video and all I hear is, ah! Ah!
Yes! Ah! Ah! Yes! Yes.
I'm like, Wendy, I have to put this on mute. Like, what the hell?
I think Wendy just loves love, too. I think she likes the idea of, I mean, it's fairly hard not to root for Robin and Juan. You know I've had my opinion about them in the past. And what I was saying back then was how they weren't on the same page. and they both weren't committed to the relationship. All of that happened, and now here they are. They're about to embark on this journey again, and they both seem to be in it for the right reasons, and they finally seem to be on the same page.
But it just goes to show that everybody loves love, and everybody loves a wonderful love story. So, you know, whether you've known Robin for 6 months or forever, like, everybody was all in and so happy.
You just revel in the happiness of anybody. But again, mm-hmm. especially as we talk about, in 2020, the attack on the Black family and the mm-hmm. way that the Black family is made to suffer and be seen as subordinate or broken in so many ways. And to see this Black family sort of elevate to this new echelon of happiness and greatness, and to see these Black mm-hmm. boys who will get to see their mother and father mend their relationship. It's a very unique story.
So it was just a really nice, like, oh my God, I'm not gonna get emotional about it, but it was just a really nice, like, you know, just like people coming together who really love each other, even though there'd been so many obstacles to try to keep them apart. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Before you guys get to the holiday party, you mentioned that Juan is preparing to propose to Robin, and Michael seems very, very convinced that it's not going to happen.
Oh, Lord.
Juan is planning to propose to Robin.
Get out of here.
Yes! And she showed me the ring.
No way.
Yeah.
It's not possible. Someone's pulling your leg. That man will not do that.
I am completely shocked by Michael saying these things about Juan, because he's never given any indication of that to me before, that he knows something about Juan.
I told Ashley in Portugal, just because Karen kept saying crazy things.
When I saw Giselle's ass on Instagram talking about she in front of a jewelry store, I'm like, Juan is joining her at the jewelry store.
And I just felt like, I don't know what Karen is going to do, and I just need some backup with regards to the ladies in case anything goes left. And of course, that would be Ashley. And she then told Michael. And Michael wasn't, like, super happy, from what I understand. Michael was like, huh, what? That ain't gonna happen. He even questioned me about it once he got there.
Juan has been reluctant previously to commit, as we all know.
Okay, I have to go check on Juan Dixon, because it's happening.
Maybe it won't.
I just didn't get it. I just felt like it was very unsupportive. And, you know, I know he's got, like, some special feelings when it comes to Juan, but I thought he would put those feelings to the side in order to be happy for Robin and Juan. Like, come on. This is like years in the making here, sir.
Oh my gosh. I felt like I was monkey in the middle because, you know, I love my husband. I support my husband always. But this is one area where we had a very different opinion. To me, I felt like Juan had some time to reevaluate his priorities, and he realized that at the end of the day, when everything came down to it, Robin was the one who had been by him, who had stuck by him, and this is where he wants to spend the rest of his life. So I, you know, being the romantic that I am, I want this fairy tale to happen. But upon asking him later what he meant, he says that he meant that Juan has been not married to Robin for so long and everything has been fine. They've been living together. Everything has been functioning normally. Why would Juan feel the pressure to get married now? He said a man is not going to necessarily think he has to do that unless someone is telling him he has to do that. Oh, I just didn't know. I wanted to be happy and be present in the moment and smile and laugh and cry tears of joy. And here Michael is saying, well, I don't know. You know, it's like, oh, what do I do?
Very weird.
Yeah.
Maybe
when did that happen?
You know what? Uh-huh. Like, maybe Michael felt like, wait a minute, Juan didn't tell me this, so it can't be true. Like, maybe he thought he should have known about this.
Before.
Before. I don't know.
And if anything, he was just being a little more salacious. It obviously worked because it got Giselle riled up, and I'm sure it's going to get Robin riled up.
What
was your reaction when you found out that the charges had been dropped by the court?
I was very relieved. I was very excited.
Thank God the charges were dropped.
I wasn't surprised, just because there wasn't a whole lot of physical damage that was done. And then I know that Monique filing that countersuit was a strategic move. Like, yeah. You know, I think it's like when stuff like that happens, like that's in order to get them to like throw the cases out.
I believe I was in Mexico. Yeah, I was in Cozumel on a family vacation, and that's when one of my Bravo besties, Portia, joined me out there with her family and her daughter, and it was just really nice. And it's so crazy because Portia had been in an incident as well some years back. So for me to get that news, and I'm sitting next to her, it was just like, wow. And she's been so supportive and just encouraging me, and it's been great to have that bond. But I was just very relieved because it was just something that was already so heavy. And then to know what the possible outcome could be and for things to keep getting dragged out further and further, I just wanted it to be done.
I was disappointed for Candace because I know that that did not offer her the closure that she needed. But it also at least was like, okay, like I can move on from this.
Yeah, I felt like from a judge's perspective, you know, these are two women that are on reality television. I'm sure their view of reality television is, you know, this is what you sign up for, getting smashed in the face. I mean, I don't know, you know, it depends on who the judge is. So I wasn't surprised, but like Robin said, I felt really horrible for Candace. I felt like, you know, she does need to see some sort of win out of this in some capacity.
The first thing that came to mind was the musical stylings of Monique Samuels. And it's like, just when you think that it can't get any more comical and disgusting, that happens.
By no means do we want to see Monique do jail time, but you know, it would have been nice for her to have some sort of repercussion or some sort of something, right, that would...
Even if it was like, okay, you have to make a public statement apologizing or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like something.
Something.
Like at least acknowledge that this took place and that something needs to happen. So
I think the only resolution, and really the most important resolution of them all, is the one that I've had internally, is that I have come to a place of kind of a little bit of peace with everything. And then especially kind of seeing everything play out and watching the court of public opinion shift in line with the truth, the actual and real truth, has been very cathartic and very, very, I don't know what this is, but this word, it's been very ha for me. So that's the only resolution in all of this that really matters.
No story about me could start and distract, you know, take away from her celebration. But we'll see how that goes.
No. She wasn't going to come. She didn't feel like it. It was all this drama with her. And it was like, girl, if you don't want to come, don't come.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy. Miss me, kiss me one more time.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.